Picture this. It's a clear June morning over the south of England, 1990. A twin-engine jetliner is climbing through 17,000 feet, headed for Spain. 81 souls on board, breakfast service just getting started in the back. And then with a bang like a shotgun going off inside a tin can, the left windscreen in front of the captain simply leaves the airplane. The captain goes with it. I'm Tower, and this is ADIS on Radio Hangar. Today we're not talking about a crash. We're talking about the accident that almost was, and the maintenance lesson buried inside it that still matters to every single one of us who trusts somebody else to turn the wrenches on our airplane. Because the headline on this one, British Airways Flight 5390, doesn't tell the whole story. The story isn't in the cockpit. It's in the shift changed the night before. Here's what you need to know. Before we get into it, today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's set the scene properly. The airplane is a BAC-111, a British-built twin, engines mounted back on the tail, a workhorse of the short-haul routes in that era. On June 10, 1990, it lifts off from Birmingham, England, bound for Malaga, Spain. In the left seat, Captain Tim Lancaster. In the right seat, First Officer Alistair Acheson, both experienced, both. By every account, having a completely routine morning, they climb out, they level off in the climb, passing 17,300 feet, the seatbelt signs go off, a flight steward named Nigel Ogden steps into the cockpit to ask about tea, and that is the moment the left windscreen departs the aircraft. Now I want you to think about what an explosive decompression actually is inside that cabin. You've got air pressurized to something close to sea level. Outside at 17,000 feet, the air is thin and the pressure is low. That windscreen is the only thing holding back the difference. When it goes, all of that cabin air wants out, right now, through a hole the size of a cockpit window. Captain Lancaster was not wearing his shoulder harness, just the lap belt, and the force of that decompression pulled him up and out of his seat and straight through the open window frame. He ended up on the outside of the airplane. Head and torso out in the 200-mile-an-hour slipstream, in air cold enough to give you frostbite in seconds. His legs, and only his legs, still inside the cockpit, jammed up over the control column. The flight steward, Nigel Ogden, was standing right there. He lunged and grabbed the captain by the belt, by the legs, by whatever he could get his hands on. And for the entire rest of this emergency, that man held onto his captain with his bare hands while the wind tried to take him. Everybody clear on the picture? Captain outside the airplane, windscreen gone, cockpit door blown off its hinges and lying across the center console, papers and debris screaming around the flight deck, and a roar so loud the crew could barely hear the radios. Now, what does the first officer do? This is the part I want every pilot listening to sit with. Alistair Acheson, in the right seat, did his job. The airplane was his now. He couldn't hear ATC clearly over the noise. He was watching his captain get pinned against the outside of the fuselage, and he flew the airplane. He initiated a rapid descent to get down to an altitude where the air was thicker and warmer and breathable. He got the airplane slowed. He squawked the emergency, declared it, and worked the problem of getting a wounded jet with a hole in the front of it onto a runway. He diverted to Southampton, a field he wasn't especially familiar with a runway that was on the shorter side for a 111. And here's the human factors piece that gets me every time. There was a real cold conversation happening in the back of that cockpit. The crew holding Lancaster genuinely believed, by this point, that he was dead. Nobody survives 10, 12, 15 minutes half outside an airliner in that cold and that wind. But there was a fear that if they let go, his body would go into the left engine mounted right there on the tail. So they kept holding on not to save him. They thought that was already lost. They held on so they wouldn't lose the airplane and everyone else on it. They were wrong about one thing, thank God. He wasn't dead. Acheson put that airplane on the runway at Southampton. Safe landing. Emergency crews met them, and Tim Lancaster was pulled back in through the window. Alive. Frostbite, bruising, fractures in his arm, his thumb, his wrist. Shock, but alive. Nigel Ogden, the man who held him, ended up with a dislocated shoulder, frostbite, and frost nip on his face from the wind. Everyone on board survived, not one fatality. That's the incident. Now here's the part that's actually a safety bulletin, and it's the part that should matter to you more than the drama. Why did that windscreen leave the airplane? The Air Accidents Investigation Branch, the British equivalent of our NTSB, took this apart. And what they found had nothing to do with the design of the window and everything to do with the 27 hours before that flight ever took off. That windscreen had been replaced, Routine maintenance. The night before, on the previous shift, a single shift manager did the job himself. And when he went to bolt the new windscreen in, he used the wrong bolts on that airplane. The windscreen is bolted on from the outside, 90 bolts, roughly around the frame. When the manager pulled the old windscreen, he wanted to reuse bolts of the same specification. He took one of the old bolts to the parts store to match it. The lighting was poor. He didn't have his glasses handy for close work. He matched it by eye and by feel. He got it wrong. Of the roughly 90 bolts he installed, the vast majority were the wrong size. Most were too small in diameter, just slightly. A handful were the right diameter, but too short. Either way, not one of them was properly holding that windscreen the way the specification required. The window was in effect being held on by friction and hope. It looked perfect. It passed a visual glance, and it held pressure just fine, sitting on the ground and even through the first several thousand feet of climb. But as the airplane climbed and the pressure differential built, the load on those undersized bolts climbed right along with it, until 17,000 feet, and then physics collected the bill. The investigators went further, because a good investigation always does. They didn't just blame one tired manager reaching for the wrong bolt at 3 in the morning. They asked why the system let him. Why was one person doing and signing off on a job like that alone? Why the part storage and labeling made it easy to grab the wrong item? Why a torque and fit check that should have caught undersized fasteners didn't? The failure wasn't a bad person. It was a chain of ordinary conditions that lined up. A rushed shift, bad lighting, an experienced man trusting his eyeballs instead of the parts catalog, no second set of eyes on a flight critical job. This affects you if you fly anything you don't personally maintain, which is almost all of us. Here's what you actually take away from 5390. First, fasteners are not a detail. The airplane is held together by hardware that has a specification for a reason. The right bolt versus a bolt that's a 32nd of an inch smaller in diameter is the difference between a routine flight and a captain hanging out the window at 17,000 feet. When you look at a maintenance logbook entry, a return to service signature is somebody telling you the right parts went back on, torqued to spec. That signature is a promise. This accident is what a broken promise looks like. Second, the one person, no second check job is where the risk lives. In the airline world after this, the industry leaned hard into requiring independent inspection on critical work, into better parts control, into not letting a single tired human be the only barrier between a mistake and a departing windscreen. In your world, general aviation, the lesson is the same, even if it's smaller. When your mechanic does critical work, a second look is cheap. An owner who understands what was done, who asks what parts went in, who reads the logbook instead of just filing it, is one more layer of safety. You're allowed to ask your A&P what he installed. Good ones like the question. Third, and this one's on you and nobody else, wear the shoulder harness. Tim Lancaster survived that day for a lot of reasons, including a steward with an iron grip and a first officer who flew a beautiful approach he never trained for. But Lancaster came out of that seat in the first place, partly because he had the harness off and only the lap belt on, in your airplane on a calm day, in the climb when it's tempting to loosen up and relax. That's exactly the moment the airplane doesn't care about. Structural failures, wake turbulence, clear air turbulence, a bird through the windscreen. The harness costs you nothing. Wear it belted and snug from before you release the brakes to after you're stopped. The one time you need it, you will not have any warning to reach for it. Let me flag one thing as opinion, so you know where the reporting stops and I start. I think the quiet hero of 5390 is the boring stuff, not the grip, not the descent, though both were extraordinary. It's the idea that a maintenance system should never let one person's bad night become everyone's emergency. Every airworthiness directive, every required inspection, every duplicate check signature that some of us grumble about as red tape. This is the accident. Those rules are written in the memory of. The rule that annoys you on a Tuesday exists because on some other Tuesday, 30-odd years ago, 90 wrong bolts nearly killed a man over the English countryside. Tim Lancaster, by the way, recovered. He was back flying within months. Alistair Acheson and Nigel Ogden were recognized for what they did, and the BAC-111, that particular airframe, went back into service. The people held up better than the hardware did. The details on this one come from the Air Accidents Investigation Branch report, the official British investigation, along with the contemporary accounts from the crew themselves. If you want the full write-up, and it's worth reading in the original, you can find our notes and links over at radiohangar.com. So the next time your airplane comes out of an annual and that logbook entry is sitting there with a signature under it, don't just close the book. Read it. Ask what went back on. The bolt you can't see is still holding you up. This is Tower. Fly it like the hardware matters, because it does. See you next time.